RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
It's time for our Monday Morning Health Hacks program here at RCR. Joining us this morning, Gary Moller, specialist practitioner in hair tissue mineral analysis, into his 51st year of either studying or working full-time in healthcare. In Wellington, Gary runs a small private clinic. His academic training through the University of Otago and medical school is in these fields: sports medicine, physical education, rehabilitation. In addition, he has numerous industry qualifications in human nutrition and the practice of using nutrition as medicine. So, Gary Moller joins me now. Hi, Gary. Good to have you again on RCR Health Hacks.
Well, as usual, it's a pleasure.
Well, it's a pleasure for us as well and for our audience, because we're going to talk about something that's very serious, actually, right? You call dementia very serious.
It certainly is. And I'm at that age where it certainly is something that's on my mind, if you'll excuse the pun. And that's dementia, cognitive decline, losing our marbles as we get older, becoming a bit fuzzy-headed, old and doddery, those sorts of terms.
And is that just, I mean, everything wears out, you know, joints wear out and organs wear out, and this is just part of that process? Or are we seeing, I don't know, something different at play in this modern day anyway when it comes to dementia?
Well, it's always been with us. I wouldn't say it's any better or any worse, though. There certainly are some things which hopefully we'll talk about today which seem to accelerate the onset of cognitive decline. What I think is really exciting is that rather than cognitive decline being an inevitable association with aging, it is in fact something that we can do a lot to prevent its onset and probably stop it for good, so that we basically die at a ripe old age, 110 years of age, with a smile on our face, hopefully, and with all of our marbles, sharp as a tack. That's what we should all aspire for.
My father is 90 going on 91, and he is as sharp as a tack. How did he do that?
Well, I don't know. It may be that he's had to keep on his toes keeping up with you, Paul.
Oh, maybe.
and certainly the people you're surrounded by are important factors. You need social engagement, you need to be challenged, and you need to be loved. You need to be felt like there's importance in your life, and also having a higher purpose.
That's interesting. A higher purpose.
Oh, yes. Well, if you don't have a sense of getting up in the morning and feeling like there is something that drives you to get out of bed and to do good works, I think this is important. Being able to doing good works, being part of your community, and not being caught up so much in oneself and perhaps selfish endeavors, but doing good for your community is, in fact, one of those key factors. You'll see that if you look at the longitudinal studies of groups or clusters of people who live a long time. I've been following the centenarian study of Okinawa for about 40 years now, and it's that community engagement and having a higher sense of purpose, which is very important, plus other things like daily exercise. So the Okinawans, the centenarians, they're out there in their gardens with their hoes most days, digging their gardens, growing their own food, and being part of their community.
So
that's simple. An important factor. But then there are other factors. I've written an article in preparation for this interview.
Yeah, I've got it in front of me right now.
Yes, it's on GaryMoller.com, Healthy Ways to Prevent Dementia. And there's a number of factors. And I think one of the really important things is to consider the role of medication these days.
Right.
There are certain classes of medication which I think accelerate the onset of dementia. And these are, for example, asthma medication, antidepressants, drugs that regulate hormones, such as for thyroids, hormone replacement therapies, and also various blood pressure and heart drugs, and, of course, the mood-altering drugs like antidepressants. These have a disturbing effect, in my opinion, of accelerating the onset of many diseases, including cognitive decline.
Right.
So certainly one of our objectives, and if you were to, again, to look at the centenarians, one of the most common factors with them is being free of the need for medication. Now, note I'm saying that very carefully. I'm not talking about just dumping your meds, but I'm talking about being free of the need. So that means identifying the root causes of, for example, elevated blood pressure, and then doing what one can, as best one can, to remove the underlying drivers of that high blood pressure, which may be stress, it may be the gradual calcification of arteries, which are gradually reversible. And by doing that, then the need for medication is therefore eliminated. And by the way, how well one's brain works is dependent on the blood flow. So as blood flow declines with cardiovascular disease, so does the blood flow to the brain, and therefore the brain doesn't work quite so well. So, you know, working on all of these other factors rather than just simply giving a drug, which in most cases treats only the symptoms and not the root cause, we can do quite a lot for maintaining or being sharp as a tack into old age.
Yeah. Gary, what about alcohol? I mean, you know, there's some big drinkers around, and I've known a few who've kind of lost it through that in this way.
Yeah. Paul, I'm not a killjoy. No, I enjoy it, as I'm sure you know. It's about moderation. It's not about excess. Even exercise is good for you. Certain healthy foods are very good for you. But it doesn't necessarily mean a whole lot more is even better. That goes with alcohol. A little alcohol, I can't see any harm at all from it. But abuse of alcohol becomes a different factor.
Yeah,
of course.
Over a long period of time,
Yes, right. Absolutely. I've set a rule for myself of basically enjoying alcohol, enjoying a drink, enjoying the socialization, which is important for cognition, but no hangovers. That's the rule. No hangovers.
That's the line in the sand. Okay, that's good. All right, let's get through some of these points that you mentioned in that piece that you just mentioned before. Tipping points. What are the tipping points?
Well, it's this applies to health across the board. The gradual development of chronic diseases. We'll often have the, we might be at a funeral and say, Paul, I saw Fred just running around just last week, and now he's dead. I never saw
happened?
That coming.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's what happens, it's like a child leaning back on a chair, and you as the parent saying, don't do that. If you go any further, you'll fall on your back. And the child, of course, ignores that, because when you're pushing back on that chair, it actually feels very stable. And then all of a sudden, you go that little bit too far and bang, the child's on their back and crying. And this happens in health. We have amazing resilience, and we can lean back further and further and further, and then all of a sudden we fall on our back. Now, for an elderly person, this may be getting a bad dose of the flu. It may be an accident. It may be the trauma of the loss of a loved one, the loss of a sense of purpose, a sense of belonging. It can be a change of medication. And that may be the tipping point where a person goes from apparent excellent health to suddenly, bang, they're on their back. And we need to be aware of those possibilities. I'd like to also just make one other point, Paul. And this is very obvious with the, for example, the President of the United States.
Yeah, wonder when he'd come up.
Well, now you can see he had a bit of a, now you know what it's like. If you're tired and exhausted, stressed, if you're like me, done a hard workout session, I come home and I'm almost incoherent. Okay. Now, yeah. When somebody's tired and exhausted, guess what? They can't think straight. Mm. And what we saw with the president is that he had what appeared to be a little bit of a cold. And you can see how that pushed him a bit over the tipping point. He's right on the edge, by the way.
Yeah.
Of falling in, I think, into absolute full-blown dementia.
Gosh.
Now, okay. And it only takes a little tipping point to shove them that way. The other thing is that if we then saw him about, just a day later, on fire at a rally. Now, the difference is that in a debate, one must think on their feet. One must string complex ideas together and come to a conclusion. When you're on the campaign trail, it's like my grandfather telling the same old story
right.
of Gallipoli again
comes,
and again.
It comes
again.
Easy. Comes a lot it's, easier.
It's very easy. And for somebody who's done 40 years of campaign trailing, rolling out the same old slogans and so on, of course he's going to do much better than having to think on his feet. So what we need to do when we're looking for the telltale signs of dementia, it's things like short-term memory and the ability to get out of one's rut, to move out of one's comfort during the day. We must be cautious or look for warning signs such as somebody who is an absolute creature of habit and can't be shifted from it, sort of the Groundhog Day type of living. And of course, when it comes to prevention or countering these things, that also gives us some clues as to what to do. So, hey, I've covered the tipping point and a little bit more, but I feel that was an important segue to make, Paul.
So he's really close, is he, to full-blown? Just asking again?
Well, I've spent probably the last 40 or 50 years seeing these processes happening. And I'd say the answer is yes. I don't think, I feel quite depressed about what could happen.
Yeah, because he's too far gone for the kind of authority that he has.
I did write an article about that, which is linked in this article, which I referred to on dementia. And what worries me is that you also get angry old men, angry old man syndrome, because, again, it's like when you're tired and exhausted and you can't think straight and somebody bombards you with this and that, the response can be anger, okay? And he's got his hand shaking and hovering over the red button of nuclear annihilation.
Apparently, Gary doesn't have to ask anyone. He can just do it. So,
and that hand might just drop.
Yeah, and maybe you thought he was switching on the air conditioning, you know.
Well, you know, the old saying, you see a red button and it's just sort of like, what was that button for?
Yeah, I'll just try it and see. Bang, yeah, nuclear mushroom. All right, reduce toxic exposures. Yes. We've talked about this before. I'm assuming that some of what we've talked about before, like metals and other things, are in that. Yes. So a bit about that.
Yes, well, very quickly, when we do the hair tissue mineral analysis testing, it just disturbs me that despite everything we're trying to do, the exposure to toxic metals in particular is on the increase. Mercury is going up despite the fact that we've removed most amalgams, for example. Arsenic is a big problem in New Zealand. Lead is extremely common, and the other is aluminium. We see aluminium everywhere. And these are all potent neurotoxins. They're most obviously toxic for children, but they also damage adult brains.
Would fluoride be in there? Gary, would fluoride be in there as well?
Yes, so you've got the halides, fluorine, chlorine, bromine, iodine, and then astatine. Fluoride, chlorine, and bromine sit on top of iodine in the periodic table, and they are like bigger bullies, okay, with fluoride being the most potent. And what they do is they shove iodine out of where it does its wonderful magic within the body, such as the thyroid. And so and let's say neurotoxin, it's a very potent neurotoxin. There's no question that fluoride reduces IQ in children. But likewise, I don't think it's a good idea for adults.
No, and built up again over a whole lifetime, you know, of just...
Yes, and in some ways, it's also another principle is the perfect storm, where it's not just fluoride, it's not just lead. It may be the loss of circulation, it may be the abuse of alcohol, it may be loneliness, it may be various medications, and they all come together to ultimately overwhelm the person. The person may cope and then they have an accident, or maybe they just go in and have some routine surgery or a hip replacement and never quite recover. So we need to look at toxic exposures and do what we can to minimize those and also to gently remove them from the body.
Traumatic brain injury, I guess that's, you know, yes, makes sense.
There's been a lot of publicity about it in like contact sports like rugby. My own father was a professional boxer after the war, and he coped very well. He was very successful in business, but I must say that once he got into his 60s, early 70s, we could see the effects of it.
Right,
Just that subtle cognitive decline that accelerated. It's as if, again, he hit a couple of tipping points. And so, yes, throughout our life, we must do what we can to protect our brains from blows. I do a sport, mountain biking, which is high risk. I use the best helmet I can find. Price is no limit. I've got the best helmet I can get, and I also practice things like tumbling. I practice skills so that if I do fall, I don't whack my head. It's so important. And as we get older, we realise just how important it is that we don't do this. So, avoiding traumatic brain injuries and then getting it properly treated. And that's something we can do a complete interview on at some stage, Paul.
Yeah, no, we can do that. Okay, this seems pretty logical. Do daily exercise that challenges balance and coordination. Balance and coordination is, you know, exercises for the brain, obviously.
Well, Paul, yes, and it's not just sitting in a gym lifting weights. It's lifting weights, doing exercise, which involves full body movements and requires balance.
Right.
I start every day by balancing on one foot while I attempt to put on my underpants and my socks.
I'd like to see that.
Sometimes it's not very elegant, and I wouldn't recommend trying to walk while trying to put one's underpants on.
No, okay? No.
It's not recommended. Just practicing balancing skills, just simply pretending to be a stork once or twice every day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just stand on one leg and just balance. It's really important to develop those skills. Yoga, Tai Chi, there's plenty that one can do to maintain those skills. Balances or lack of balance is one of the best predictors of aging, of cognitive decline.
Okay.
And by the way, hey, just watch. One other thing, practice marching. Put on music with a good beat.
Yeah.
And practice marching. One of the things I've actually written an article. People could look for it. Gary Moller, are you a T-Rex walker? In other words, as people get older, and you can see this again with our beloved president, is walking without swinging, without a meaningful, purposeful stride. As we get older, I would urge everyone, including myself and you, Paul.
Yep, thank you.
Not that you're that old. You're not that old. But to march. Okay, the hup, two, three, four. Okay, so Dr. Hook music is really good for doing that, by the way.
Okay.
You can put that on as part of this interview.
Walk right in.
there's various ones. A really good beat, which you just automatically, if you're in the supermarket and you hear that sort of music, you'll find that you actually start walking to the beat.
Okay.
But the really important thing is the swinging of the arms. Do not allow the arms to dangle at the sides, and worse than that, to allow the arms to be held behind the back, such as holding a handbag behind your back.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. That is, you just imagine. Well, the reason why we have arms, we have it for various reasons, and why we don't have tails. As we swing our arms to maintain balance and stability.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's a good
one. It's like having a gyro, kind of like a little gyro on board, keep you stabilized. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And as we get older, it really does, I find it kind of hard to not say something as when somebody walks and they have their hands behind their back. Okay,
yep.
It's not safe. If they trip and fall, they're going to fall on their face.
Yeah. They're not going to get their arms out in time to.
No, not at all.
No.
Yeah.
Okay, I understand that one. Commune with Mother Nature.
Of course. And we should do this every day. And that is just simply get outside and fill the lungs with beautiful fresh air, sunshine, listen to the birds twittering, smell the different odors of the sweetness of Mother Nature, and so on. Okay, and focus the eyesight on the horizon and so on.
Okay.
It's very simple, get out of our apartments, get out of our offices at least once a day, and be one with Mother Nature. It's very simple, and it's so important for cognition. It's so simple and so effective.
Yeah, can be beautiful. Do or learn new things every day. Well, that I can see how that can help. That keeps things active. I wonder how simple or complicated you make that, though. I mean, do you go, you know, learn a simple thing, or you're like, okay, I'm gonna do a deep dive into particle physics, you know?
Well, Paul, I think the key is something new. Something new mentally and physically. Like, I use a computer a lot. I make a point every day of trying to learn a new function or to play around with some of the inner workings or to learn a new app. But also, I'll go outside and I'll get on my bike and I will practice my skills. I don't just put my head down and go straight ahead. I will always try to refine and develop new skills at whatever I'm doing. And it's part of this not allowing ourselves to get into Groundhog Day, to become too much creatures of habit. It is important that we are creatures of habit, but we don't want to be stuck in a rut. We need to maintain that flexibility, the physical and mental flexibility.
Yep. Okay. Understand. Don't get too comfortable.
Well, it's a good continuation on what we just said. Yep. Yes. But this is where, for example, there was a dear old lady in her 90s in Oriental Bay who made the press because every day, come winter or whatever, she took a cold dip in the ocean.
Wow. Okay. I see people doing that these days, but maybe not at that age.
Hmm. And it's the cold shock that gives a stimulation to body and mind, including the immune system. So creating discomfort stimulates a response to grow stronger. Physical discomfort, mental discomfort, moving out of one's comfort zone is the way that we grow stronger. And the worst thing we can do is, especially as we get older, is to become too comfortable. Mm. It's easy. Hey, we earned it. We earned it. You know, I mean,
the culture kind of tells you to do that, you know, that you should be doing that. That's what the culture tells.
Yes, that's right. You know, it's time for the rocking chair, Granddad. Yeah. Enjoy the rocking chair, but, you know, at least a few times a day, get out of it and throw a little bit of stress on body and mind. It's the way that things grow stronger.
Nature works like that, doesn't it, across the board? Okay. This is probably not rocket science. Regular habits, including sleep. Sleep's really important, isn't it?
Yes. So the opposite is looking at the poor health outcomes of people who do rotating shifts. In other words, have disturbed biorhythms. We are creatures of habit. Going to bed at exactly the same time, getting out of bed, waking up at exactly the same time, eating at the same time, going to the toilet at the same time, exercising at the same time. Those are all very important qualities for health. So, being a creature of habit is very important, critical, but also introducing discomfort.
Yeah,
so important within
an element
that,
of it. Yeah,
within those that consistent daily habit, by the way, that includes the weekends. Get up at the same time, and have a nap in the middle of the day, a siesta.
Yeah, I quite like the afternoon nap sometimes.
Well, Paul, you look at every society prior to industrialization, prior to the production line, every society had their form of a siesta. Human beings were never meant to go nonstop at a furious rate from dawn till dusk.
Yeah.
We got up at dawn, we finished after dusk, but we traditionally, human beings would go in bursts of activity. And we should be cognizant of that. And where possible, reintroduce the siesta. Have your lunch and then close your eyes, even if it's only for 15 minutes.
It's easier to nod off at that time, I notice. You know, it's not like you have to wait for ages.
We risk exhaustion, adrenal fatigue, just burnout.
Yeah. All right, we're talking about the strategies to prevent dementia with Gary Moller, and I'm going to bundle these two together because we kind of touched on it already. Seek and foster loving relationships and engage with your community. I'm thinking loneliness is really bad.
Oh, yes. And I'm sure all of us can recount stories of where, say, an elderly couple, one dies and then the other passes away, sometimes even just days later.
Yeah, very soon. Yeah.
Later. Yes, it's really important that if you look at, well, we did touch on it, the centenarians of Okinawa, the elderly continuing to be part of the community, contributing. It's the way that societies are. My other side is Pacifica, and Pacifica elderly don't get put into old people's homes, okay?
No.
They're cared for by the families. They still have meaning, they have respect. They're important parts of the family, of the community. They have their church and so on. And that's just critical to remain engaged throughout life. And definitely loneliness is a killer, especially for the elderly.
Yeah, what you just said, I totally agree with, and it kind of, my heart sinks that we do it, you know, the push them out, put them in storage, basically, is what that is until it's all over. It's very sad that our culture, that part of our culture has gone that way.
Well, I fear for how many elderly died during the COVID lockdowns.
Yeah.
Not being able to see loved ones, being isolated, not being able to see people's faces because of masks, which is really important if somebody's suffering cognitive decline. You know, being able to see people smiling, to be able to communicate through expression and so on. That's just so valuable, so important.
It was a crime to do that to people. Anyway, we know what we think about that. All right, we've talked about the higher cause, nutrients that contribute to brain resilience and neuroregeneration. So you can reverse things, right?
Oh, it is. It's very exciting to look at. Well, first of all, one must have a nutrient-dense diet, and this is critical as we get older. An elderly person who is frail, inactive, possibly medicated, may have such low energy output that they can go through an entire day with maybe a cup of tea with a bit of sugar and a biscuit.
That's all they need.
That may be all that they need. And what we need to look at with the elderly, or we need to be asking the question, is where's the nutrients? As one gets older and needs less to eat in order to meet their caloric needs, then the nutrient density of the food must increase, not decrease. Now, unfortunately, the opposite tends to happen. Now, also talking about loneliness, Paul, when an elderly person is living on their own, it's very hard to eat a cabbage before it goes off, okay?
Yeah.
Yes. It's when somebody is living with another, with a loved one and within a family, then there's more likely to be good food being prepared and cooked nice and fresh and so on. Whereas when one is on their own, then maybe that can of baked beans will suffice for the next couple of days. Okay. So, and if you just look at what is served in institutions, it's just so nutrient poor. I did mention salt as being critical. Elderly people tend to be salt deprived. Okay. They take the salt off the menu. And salt, and I'm talking about multi-mineral salts like Celtic salt and Himalayan salt as opposed to refined salt here. And if somebody is salt deprived, some of the symptoms are osteoporosis, fatigue, confusion, poor digestion, and very low blood pressure. Now, that's actually describing many elderly. And on top of that, they may be on medication, which further adds to the fatigue and the confusion and so on. So depriving somebody of salt is not necessarily a good thing. By the way, I see that only about 10% of hypertensives, in other words, people with high blood pressure, salt intake is actually a contributing factor. So for the majority of people with elevated blood pressure, a multi-mineral salt has no negative effect on a person's blood pressure.
That's handy to know.
It is. And just Google Gary Moller, I've got high blood pressure, and and read about it. So first of all, salt is like an electrolyte. Multi-mineral salt is, in fact, an electrolyte drink, which has many health benefits. Now, actual nutrients that the brain needs, first of all, are fats and oils. And we're talking about fats that are found in animal products, oily fish, coconut, avocado. And many of these foods are not included in an elderly person's diet. In fact, an elderly person is encouraged to go fat-free. And that is not a good thing because the brain is around about 60% fat. So if somebody is on a low-fat diet, they're immediately putting their brains at risk. The other thing is the fat-soluble vitamins, vitamins A, D, E, and K. They're critical for the immune system, eyesight, strong bones, tendons, ligaments, for beautiful skin, nice strong skin, and also for the brain. So if somebody is depriving themselves of natural unprocessed fats and oils, they are by default depriving themselves of the fat-soluble vitamins. So this is very important. The meat and eggs and oily fish are what we should be feeding the elderly, not pasta, rice, and overcooked vegetables. And white meat, red meat is what we should be feeding an elderly person. In fact, liver once a week would be absolutely fantastic.
Okay. Yeah.
As a food. Now, there are special nutrients that are known to help with nerve regeneration of the central nervous system. These are, you can look them up. It's in my article on healthy ways to prevent dementia. Just Google Gary Moller, healthy ways to prevent dementia. And we're talking about taurine, carnitine, N-acetylcysteine, and quercetin. Now, it just so happens, you might recognize these, that these are used for basically preventing the worst consequences of viruses and certain injections, like COVID-19. Yeah, okay. Just pointing it out, just saying.
Quite
fascinating. Yes, so these things will reduce COVID-19 hospitalizations by about 80%. But of course, we can't have that because it gets in the way of emergency use authorization of experimental vaccines.
Yeah, which is still there. Now,
I know, and there's more to come, but no doubt you're covering that people. And then there's other things like astaxanthin, which is found in marine phytoplanktons of the orange or red type, coenzyme Q10, which you find in red meat, liver, eggs, those kinds of foods, turmeric, and brightly coloured red, orange, yellow, green vegetables. Okay. If you think of turmeric, why is it so amazing? Well, because it is the brightest of yellow. If you think of paprika, it is scarlet red. If you think of black currant, why is black currant so good? Because it is so red, it looks black. It's the deepest red. Broccoli, it's so good. Hey, it's deep green.
Iridescent green, actually.
Yeah, colours, the primary colours, red, orange, yellow, green, in the vegetable world and berry world, what give health.
And I love it, the way that nature has colour-coded, even colour-coded the food. Well, crikey.
We're all photons. We're just photons of light.
Yeah.
That light in those, and that's in the visible spectrum and into the infrared, which energize, which give health and vitality, and are great for the brain, as you can see. Yeah. And and by the way, it just so happens that many of these nutrients, first of all, quercetin, one of the richest sources, if not the richest natural source, is actually New Zealand black currant, which is also a wonderful source, one of the richest sources of natural vitamin C, and it's low sugar. So black currant is an amazing product, an amazing nutrient for somebody to be taking. And just giving a elderly person a teaspoon of freeze-dried black currant in a drink each day will improve their cognition. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And whey protein is a source of taurine, carnitine, and so on. That's why a whey protein drink, if you just look it up, do a Google. Just type into Google whey protein and dementia, for example, or whey protein cancer survival, and you'll see what I mean.
Okay.
For the elderly, for preventing dementia, a nutrient-dense diet, going back to traditional ways of eating, it's a no-brainer.
Gary, great to have you back on for our health hacks. Really interesting, a lot of great information. And if anyone has any questions or comments, they can get in touch with you through the website, obviously, at garymoller.com. Until next time, Gary, we'll see you.
Thank you very much, and go Reality Check Radio.
Loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.